at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Okay, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing. It's Ger and Johnny with you all the way through for the next hour. If you've got anything racing related or indeed life related that you'd like to get off your chest, if you're listening in the evening, you can text us on 53106, or if you're listening right now, you can get us on Twitter at Off the Ball. And Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball is of course brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie, get onto the Twitter account. That's at HRI Racing, and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. We're very thankful to have Johnny Ward with us alive and well in studio. It's been quite the week, Johnny, as people who are watching on YouTube will now see. If you want to give us your profile there.
There we are.
What happened to you?
Just had a crash in the bike. I was just thinking there have been a few kind of racing related shows where there have been these massive revelations early on. And I think some people will know what I'm talking about in terms of a very profound interview on another racing related podcast recently, but this one is just, I literally just fell off the bike. And it's kind of, I'd never been to hospital. I was turned 39 yesterday, so I was thinking I'd get to 40, never go to hospital.
It just happened on Wednesday, did it?
Yeah, just I was out cycling and just out with a couple of friends who happily were behind me. And it was funny, I was conscious of leaves and that going downhill and all that the last time I was on. I think even JP, our producer, said I was on about that. I don't know what happened. It was nearly in a scurry, just kind of braked and completely lost control and ended up concussed and
knocked out
and in hospital in Vincent's. Yeah, so
every time we have a jockey on in particular who's fallen off, we ask them about the moment of the fall. It turns out you see quite a lot. I remember riding as a kid, going the world slowed down and the train inched towards me type thing, and the teacher's always like, "Oh, that's ridiculous, everything happens so fast, I think you can't remember anything." But you can remember just the precise moment of it, or at least there is an awareness. There's enough time for your brain to go, something bad is happening here.
Yeah, it was complete damage limitation, because I guess initially I crashed the car once, and that happened when I casually brake going around a bend and there was black ice, and immediately that moment you're gone, like, so it's damage limitation. And with this, it was like, I remember braking and the back wheel was just, there was no give whatsoever. It was just literally, and I completely lost control. And then in my head, I have no way of negotiating this bend, and it's quite a bad bend. It's kind of like it's almost like a U in the road. It's long, but it's deceptive. And I remember just seeing the signpost in front of me, a tree and a ditch, and I was just like, what's the least worst option here? And it was just kind of, I don't really remember much after that, but it was just like, what do I avoid here?
You hit the ditch.
I think I hit the ditch and kind of went head over it, like, and it was probably going about 40 kilometres an hour, which isn't insane, but it wasn't great. And like, the helmet then kind of fell apart afterwards, but I was on to the Clane Wheelers afterwards telling them my sob story, and they went on to the Strava and they found out the accident's kind of location, and they said, like, that is exactly where Mick crashed the other month. So I wasn't out that Sunday, but the lads went out cycling, and one of the lads had a terrible crash, was concussed and hasn't cycled much since, and it turns out it was at the exact same corner. But I went into Vincent's, and it was kind of just protocol. I was in there a long time.
The ambulance brought you in.
Yeah, and they were brilliant, like, and I was in there for 7 or 8 hours, so I was thinking a lot, and I was like, how do sports people just get up from things like this? And a lot of them just play on, like, and I felt okay after it, and I was like, there's nothing wrong with me. But by all accounts, I was confused and dazed.
Because you were knocked out for 2 or 3 minutes.
Knocked out, yeah. And I don't remember, like, and then in hindsight, you're like, actually, how do I end up going from there to here? And I got thinking of sports people who just have had this several times, like, because I've never had anything, like, never been in hospital, never had anything wrong with me. And so this was like, it was a big deal. I couldn't get a coffee in the hospital. That was my main problem. But other than that, they couldn't be nicer, like.
Right, okay. And so will you get back on the bike again, get straight back up on the horse?
My bike is goosed, like, so that was the disappointing part. My bike is all bent. The frame of it is really gone, like. But it's funny, like, because some of the people that you cycle with, like, they would have had near-death experiences where they you know, the way you can kind of have a split second decision when you're taking a right turn, you're, will I go, will I not? And they've just been hit by a car and could have died, like, and they were like, unconscious or whatever, and they've just got back up on the bike. So I'm hoping something as minor as mine will be fine. But it did make me think about descending, because, you know, I was kind of at the mercy of whatever was going to happen there. And I wasn't going to die, but I could have had bad injury at the same time, something that would have been a lot worse than nothing, as it turned out, but anything that's spinal or whatever. And then you think about jockeys, you look at today, Rachel Blackmore, and the last race, the two horses both effectively coming to the ground at the second last, and Rachel, while grounded, staying on the horse and getting up and winning an amazing race. And what jockeys go through did make me think, like, because I just, you know, I this is the biggest thing ever, and I milked it on social, like, on WhatsApp. I was like telling everyone how bad I was. I just got a few bruises.
I mean, look, that separates us from them, right? That makes you a normal human being, where you're like, and sympathy here, everybody, please. But the professional athletes, and particularly the jockeys, are like, say nothing, I'll be grand.
Yeah.
Don't show any signs of pain.
The concussion thing was interesting, because I was starting to think, like, if you had a scatter of these in your career, yeah, it would worry me a bit, you know. And I think, you know, I'm obviously worried about sport, what's coming down the tracks in that regard. But, yeah, it was interesting. Because we went, I was saying this to the lads, it was Kieran Whelan from the Irish Independent, who's a big cycling man, and David Fitzgerald, who's with Sportsfile. And we had never cycled together before, but I was saying to them how, this is the irony of it, I was saying to them, I was in Mallorca, and God, I found them really, like, I found everyone really coy and careful on the descents, and we were, myself and Ron and my mate, we were passing everyone out in the descents, and I just thought they lacked bravery or whatever, and maybe they were just doing it right.
Did you say this, an hour before?
Yeah. Right. Totally, yeah.
Wow.
But now, in fairness, in Mallorca, you had these amazing conditions where you felt the bike felt
different.
Totally safe.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it was. Maybe I had this kind of false sense of security where...
Let's travel as well. It makes you do stupid things a little bit.
Yeah, but it,
where it loses
on the
your
bike,
sense of...
you felt completely... I hadn't been on my own bike really since, but I can't explain, Jared, that feeling where you're just like... You touch the brake and you were gone, and you were like, there's no way back from this. What's just happened here? And all you can think of then is... I've never crashed before. How do I make this...
It's a wet leaf, was it?
I can't even remember. It must have been grease in the road, because I completely lost control.
Well, we're glad you're still alive, Johnny.
Yeah, maybe I'll start giving good 10 to follow horses now. But yeah, it was all in good fun. One thing I will say, and lastly though, is nurses and all that, they're just so sound. Like, they're just... they do it every day. And I was during COVID, I was thinking, you know, that they're not particularly well paid and it's a bit of a grind, but I got this great sense of camaraderie among them, that they kind of almost enjoy going in and meeting each other and having the crack even in difficult times. And they're amazing people, actually. Yeah, just went up my estimation anyway.
Alright, you mentioned Rachel Blackmore there. She is officially the 2021 Irish Racing Hero Award winner, and she'll pick up her award at the annual HRI Awards next month. They've released this in advance. There couldn't have been anything other than Rachel Blackmore. It's whether or not she goes on to win all of the sports awards competitions this year, because there's fairly stern competition. It's been quite a remarkable year. Leona Maguire had a good year, a few others, Katie Taylor again,
Kelly Harrington.
But what Rachel Blackmore has done is right up there with anybody.
Yeah, I guess, what are we talking about here, like sportsperson of the year or?
Yeah, well, she's obviously, as I said, Irish Racing Hero Award winner. But
oh yeah, in terms of the, like, I think last year like Sam Bennett was overlooked in the base of his achievements. I don't think that's going to happen with Rachel, because it was just completely insane, and racing really needed that help. It was a bad year for racing on many levels, and Rachel became such a poster girl for it, and massively good publicity for the sport. Let's not forget now, she's had a serious injury since and came back today and produced, like, this is something that you will see on, you know, you'll see it for years to come, what happened today. And herself and Henry de Bromhead have...
So a lot of people won't have seen what happened today. Explain what happened.
Yeah, I was literally just coming in, and it was all on the WhatsApp. So it was a two-horse race, and there are lots of layers to this debate, because it was a two-horse race in Cheltenham today. Good novice chase with reasonable prize money. And
that's what was going on, because they were saying, I saw on Twitter, it was like, they've literally never seen anything as crazy as this in a racetrack. I was like, really? That sounds a little bit like, yeah, it's a bit too much, but you're saying...
It wouldn't be far off now, and like, there are a kind of... You can debate whether or not horses should continue in this circumstance. It happened before when Koto Star was like, I want to say he was about 20 lengths clear at the second last. He was about fives on as a novice chaser, I think, Ruby Walters riding him, and he basically capsized at the second last. Ruby got back on him and he was beating a short head after all that. And I think after that, British Race and Bard remounting horses. So once they're... And I think there's really sound reasoning for that. It's that basically you can't tell the extent of the injury, and it's happening so fast. How are you to judge as a jockey? But what they did today, Rachel, was perfectly within the rules. So it's a two-horse race. It was originally a three-horse race. One of the Irish Raiders didn't run, was scratched early, so it was a two-horse race. And it was kind of almost counterintuitive in that this is particularly bad if racing can only produce two runners for a race like this. But it also got people talking, because match races are quite unique, and this was a match race in which they kind of both did have a chance. So the two of them, the Nichols horse came and Rachel's horse, Gin on Lime, came to the second last. Looks like Rachel's getting the worst of the argument. But the two horses, almost at the same time, and I've only watched it once, they effectively crumble to the ground.
Yeah.
And is it Harry Cobden's riding Nichols' horse? I think he's sort of ejected out the side door. But Rachel, and I doubt she's taken in what's happening beside her, manages to stay on the horse. And the horse fairly quickly gets back in his feet. And Rachel just, now she looks around, all I have to do here is literally complete. And she probably even had time to size up, how is this horse feeling? And I imagine Rachel would have said, well, if he doesn't feel right, I'm not going to ask him to jump the last. But she did, and the two-horse race, which showed racing's problems in many regards, and Cheltenham numbers are bad this weekend, actually became a really, really good publicity stunt for racing, unbeknownst to itself.
It's already doing hundreds of thousands of views. And it's
is it really? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, of course it is. Mm. And it's the type of thing that you're going to see again and again.
That's the madness of jumps racing.
I actually have never seen anything like
it. How would you explain it? Like,
well, just her centre of gravity, her brilliance to be able to kind of not fall off the horse even though the horse has fallen. I haven't seen that very often.
Yeah, there was the one that comes to mind is Ruby on Kilaltavik, where he had the worst like non-fall you could have, whereas it was all, to all intents and purposes, he fell at the last at Leopardstown again, 2-7 favourite, crumbled to the ground. And there was that photo of Ruby as the horse was capsizing, but his sit was absolutely perfect. Like, it was like, this is just years and years and years of practice and horsemanship where you're still in the reins. And I don't know if Rachel can explain it, but she somehow managed to stay on the horse, stay in the stirrups, and guide it back to victory. So, you know, like, if you've had a bet in that horse, you're watching the race, you're like, oh,
what?
Ooh. And I imagine both horses emerged unscathed as well. What a race.
The other one was galloping off to the line as a loose horse at the end.
As if he won.
Yeah, happy as Larry with life, thinking he has won. So
that's the beauty of jumps racing, I think. In fairness, it's that we don't realise the thrills and the danger of it as a jockey, but stuff like that happening, it's just marvellous. And it's kind of unique to these, you know, this part of the world as well, where there's only a very small part of the world where jumps racing is anywhere big, and Ireland is effectively at the heart of it, and I think we should be proud of it. It's an amazing, amazing sport.
So I just looked up the Kilaltavik thing that you're talking about there. Mm. That is also ridiculous.
Yeah, and he won as well.
Yeah.
And of course, there obviously is betting and running carnage when these things happen, like, because I have no sympathy for people who want to lay horses that have fallen thinking they can't be beaten. I can lay this horse 1,000 to 1 and I'll pick up like money for jam, but the danger of that is things can go wrong like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. I'm delighted to say our guest this week is none other than the legend Noel Mead, who is with us now. Noel, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Very good lads.
We want to talk to you about the centenary of Navan Racecourse. We talked about some other stuff as well, but you're centrally involved in proceedings over the next couple of weeks, which is going to help mark the fact that it's 100 years of racing at Navan. As somebody who's local to the track and who's seen the track evolve over the last 30, 40 years. What does reaching a milestone like this say about the importance of racing to the local community?
Well, having been involved in it for so long, it's absolutely fantastic that we got here, because at one stage it looked like it was going to be closed down, and there was a great effort put in by a lot of people. I mentioned one man in particular, William Flood, who gathered everybody around him and put all shoulders to the wheel to get it kept going. And it would have been such a disaster had it been let go at the time, because it is such a fabulous track. It's probably one of the best jumping tracks in Ireland, to be honest, and on a pretty decent flat track as well.
It's like, Noel, how would you describe the test at Navan? Because it's unique. Maybe Naas is quite is slightly similar, but from my perspective, I don't think there's a fairer test of the horse, of the jockey. Obviously, when the ground is testing, it gets particularly bad, but it's a big galloping track, produces brilliant finishes, and I suppose when you come into the top of the straight, you're only halfway there. I love Navan. How would you describe the track?
Yeah, I'd agree with you 100% on that one. Like, I mean, if you get beaten in Navan, it's because you're not good enough. It's not because you get held in, or you got stopped, or you didn't get a run, because it's rare that you get into trouble in the straight in Navan and can't get out and you don't win. It's a very fair track that way. It's a very stiff finish, which again lends itself to getting the best result, because you have to get to the line. You have got a 4.5 furlongs of a straight, and over fences and on over hurdles, and it, as I say, it lends itself to being a very fair track for that reason. It's a place most trainers, I don't know anybody that wouldn't like to be starting their horses off there. Like, you can bring one there that has never had a run, and you can reasonably expect him to run his race, because it's a big galloping track and plenty of room, and the bends are nice and easy, and it's a lovely place to go with a first time out.
Just to go back for a second, Noel, when you talked about the effort to save the racetrack, sometimes, like, I don't know if you remember, Connacht Rugby were in danger of being wound up by the IRFU, and people marched on Lansdowne Road, and that saved Connacht, and now all of a sudden we realise the benefit of it, and it's kind of a very grassroots organisation that really connects with the locals. Was there a dividend in some ways in everybody realising that actually we nearly lost this, that kind of woke people up in the locality that this shouldn't be taken for granted?
Oh, I think for sure. Racing has come through a lot of different spells in my time anyway, where it's been high and low, not just Navan, but other tracks as well, all around. Like, I mean, where it has been the place to go and then maybe lost ground and then picked up again. But Navan did certainly, when it got going again, true probably... we came across it when it really started hit going again, was because of a manager called Richard Little, who's now in the north. He's the manager in Downpatrick. If I had my way, I would have Richard Little giving advice to every manager in the country on how to run a racetrack, because in my opinion, he's probably the best manager there is in Ireland.
And what kind of stuff was he getting up to, Noel, that was so impressive?
He just was everywhere. He was like, Richard ran the track like it was his own, house or his own place. He had everything. He never spent too long in the one place, because he was that busy making sure everybody was going, was happy when they were there. He had entertainment. He had the food. He made sure the food was right. He made sure the entertainment was right. Made sure the racing was right. He was just a one-off. He is, and still is, because he's done the same thing in Downpatrick. Downpatrick is a pleasure to go to. Navan was the same when he came into it. He came in, he welcomed everybody in. It didn't matter whether you were the big or the small, he welcomed everybody. And it's one of the things that I hope we're still doing it, and I hope that we can keep on doing that, because it's one of the most important things in a racetrack, that everybody is welcome.
Yeah, the race course manager, it's hard to overstate his or her importance in this. And everything Noel says about Richard, I've been to Downpatrick, come into the press room, just every little area of you know, the whole experience at Downpatrick, he will look after. Downpatrick caters for up more or less summer racing, kind of lower grade of jumps racing, and the crowds there, absolutely fantastic, really, really good atmosphere, exactly what you'd want. Total and utter gentleman, fellow from the north who obviously kind of went back home to an extent after Navan, but I could see why he would have had that effect, because as Noel says, he looks after everyone, be you the trainer, be you the jockey, be you the journalist, be you the race scorer, and that's a very, very important point, because we're in an era where it's not easy to sell racing. I think out of COVID it's going to be harder than ever, and the role of the race course manager is massive, and you can't get away with just going through the motions.
Noel, reading about this in advance of coming on to talk to you, I was like, you're at a stage of life now where being chairman of your local racetrack at the moment of its centenary might be something important, where that kind of sense of history and locality is something that you can kind of look back on. And then I looked at your record over the last year and it's bloody good. So you're managing to combine the ability to look back in time and be a part of history and paying due deference to it, and at the same time ripping it up. So you're managing to keep those two hats on at the same time.
Well, look, to be honest, I'm chairman in Navan, but it's not a huge job. There's a manager in there, and there's plenty of help in the background. Aidan is there now, and he's doing a good job, and Peter was there before him, and he did a good job. So the chairman is very much just a name on the page. I wouldn't really have a lot of to do so as such, but they have a good team, and they're able to keep the show rolling along. On the other side of it, look, I suppose I enjoy doing what I'm doing, and racing has been very good to me over the years. I've been very lucky, and things have worked out very well for me.
What are the challenges, Noel, to run a race course like Navan? What are the challenges day to day for everyone involved?
Well, when the TV money came through, like most race courses in the country at that time were broke. They were, before they started to get the money from the TV rights. Like, I'd say every racetrack in the country, maybe with the exception of one or two, had long overdrafts and were struggling very badly. And HRI was struggling badly trying to keep the whole show on the road at that stage. But when the funding came through, the television rights and the pictures, the race courses started to make money. And most of them now are in a pretty healthy state, and even through COVID, even though it has cost them quite a bit, they've done okay. And even though, as I say, there was less to be got, but hopefully when we get through this whatever we call a pandemic, when we get through this and get going again, we'll be able to get back to where we were at. But race courses have been going reasonably well because of that. Crowds now at this stage have become very selective in where they've gone or where they're going. Like, I mean, we've now got to a stage where, you know, I often think we might be better off on midweek race meetings if people were allowed in for nothing and whatever, and we ran it like that, because crowds have got so selective. They just go to the main meetings and to the festivals and to the big meetings at the weekends. The midweek racing is very hard to sell. And small, even on Saturdays, if the meeting is not great, that's hard to sell as well.
That's the double-edged sword of that, isn't it? That the TV rights money sort of was a boon for the racetracks, but you will get a sense of some racetracks now that, I mean, a very good race meeting can make six figures in one day from TV rights money, from media rights money. And whilst they're not all getting that, you do get the sense from some, don't you, that they get the money, they're not overly bothered about the experience of people who actually go racing anymore.
Yes, I think there are people, there are places where they're guilty of that. I think that's there's no doubt about that, Johnny. I'd agree with you that that has become something that has to be really looked at seriously, and tracks have to be kept up to the work. You know, they really have to be kept up to it, because there are places where they do slack off and sort of sit back on their laurels a little bit because they have the funds.
The Ladbrokes Troytown Chase is on the 21st of November, and that's when there'll be a plaque unveiled, and I know there's a winter market there as well, so it's not just a racing festival or a racing day on the day itself. There will be some pomp and circumstances, and everybody gets to put on their glad rags for it as well. From your perspective, that part of being involved in it and being a figurehead and being able to talk about everybody, that must be nice to be so closely associated with a local track and to have that deep understanding that you've been able to explain to us. Is there a sense of pride in being centrally implicated in that part of Ireland's racing heritage?
Absolutely. Like I it's only when they started talking about the fact that it was 100 years old that it started to come through to me just how much pride it did and personal satisfaction it does give me. But I've been involved in Navan for so long. I actually went to Fairy House for a while on the board in Fairy, or the committee in Fairy House for a while, and then I was moved back to Navan. But they're two mead tracks, and I have great time for both of them. Like, basically, my input into both Navan and Fairy House and has always been about the racing. It's about what the racing is and what the ground is like and whatever. We're very lucky in Navan. We have a very, very good groundsman who learned his trade on the golf course, and he's fabulous with his grass management and fabulous with the way he minds the track. He's an ex-All-Ireland footballer as well, so that's Donald Curtis. Now, he was well trained in the management by Vincent Devers, who was there and is still there to give him a bit of advice as well. Although he's semi-retired, but we're very, very lucky to have the staff in Navan that we have to look after the track.
The fact that it's dual purpose and on your doorstep, was that one of the things that always made you interested in being dual purpose, or am I wrong about that? Because I know you started out on the flat and then were very focused on the jumps for a long period of time, and just recently have gone back to being, I don't know what the split is, but certainly very successful over the flat this past 12 months as well.
No, actually, when I started training, I would have trained anything. If they gave me Delaney's donkey, I would have tried to train it and make a run. I was basically anything they gave me or anything I could get, I trained. But then when I started buying horses, I started buying flat horses because they were easier to buy, or maybe it was more of a business venture as such, because you could buy them and sell them. If you buy a yearling and he runs on the flat, and if he's too slow, he still can be a jumper. If you buy a jumper and he's too slow, he's a hunter. So the hunt, that's basically the why that happened. But then back in about the mid-80s, or sort of going into up to the 90s, I suppose, I realised that I was really only running in handicaps and that on the flat. And that, I remember one day I was doing the entries for the Curra, and like the only entries I had were for handicaps, and I was just looking at all these stakes races and that I had nothing for. And I, at the time, I had reasonable clients, and I thought if I put the money they had into jumpers, that I could maybe get there. So I did. I switched completely and stopped buying flat horses and started buying jumpers and started buying horses off the flat to go jumping. And it worked very well. And it was like I was champion trainer 7 times and I was leading trainer jumpers in Ireland 9 times. So it worked very well. But funny,
in have the tables turned now though, have they?
Absolutely, Johnny. Absolutely, the situation has gone round. Has gone round a complete circle, where now the jumping horses have become so expensive, and that it's just impossible to compete unless you have somebody with a, like we've been training for Gigginstown for the last number of years, which is great, and they've been fabulous owners to train for because they bought good horses and they're good people to train for as well. But they're easing down, and we get the like Michael's not buying any new stock, so slowly but surely they left us with the ones we had, but the other ones are will wear out or whatever, you know. And as they do, they're sold off, or you know, if they get injured or whatever, they move along or they're retired. So we now find ourselves that we're short. So I changed quite a few of my owners back the other way and started to buy flat horses again, because I found that I was able to buy flat horses for easier than I was able to buy jumpers. I mean, we go to the store sales now at the moment, and jumpers are making between anything from 50 to 100 grand you can spend on a three-year-old, and 2 years later you might have nothing, you know. And you can go to a flat sale and bring home nice yearlings for anything from 10 to 30, 40 grand, you know. It doesn't seem to make sense. And the flat horse is a worldwide commodity. He can go to America, he can go anywhere in the world, practically anywhere. Like, he can go to China, go to Hong Kong, Australia. Whereas the jumper, basically, if he's to be sold, there's really only one market. It's either in Ireland, to stay in Ireland, or if he goes abroad, it has to be to England. Those top horses at the moment are being costing just astronomical amounts of money.
This has absolutely baffled me, because it just doesn't really make sense. And it's almost like the jumps game has become like the haves and the everyone else. Like, and it's when Michael O'Leary knows that when he exited the stage, and it's a gradual process or whatever, it seemed to imply that it would take a big chunk out of the market. And a horse is only ever what two people decide he's worth, and the guy who ends up paying for it, or the woman, that's effectively what the horse is worth, whether he's worth it or not. That's what he's worth in that market, because the guy with the ego versus the guy with the ego, one of them decided, I want that horse over you. And I'm not putting Michael O'Leary in that boat, because he wasn't, that's not his modus operandi. But when you consider how long it takes for a jump horse to come, that British racing is in a state of crisis in the jumps game in many respects. Yes, for the likes of Noel Mead now, it's very, very, very hard to get that boutique horse. And then, Noel, you end up getting, you know, more flat horses and completely flip everything around by winning a Group 1 on the flat.
Yeah. Very lucky over the last number of years with horses that we bought, where they didn't cost a lot of money but turned out to be reasonable horses. Obviously, Helvic Dream has been a dream come true to win a Group 1 with him. I was lucky to have the assistance of Colin Kane to do that. Probably that was, I owe a lot to Colin for it. But he was a very nice horse, and I was lucky that the owners, he was a soft ground horse, which probably was the reason that we ended up having him, because if he had been a fast ground horse, undoubtedly he would have went to Australia or he would have went abroad, because he would have been sold to America or Australia. But they're very much in the market for good ground horses.
We actually have the last 30 seconds of Helvic Dream's victory here. You can hear the commentary is
I can still remember it anyway.
Yeah.
Of Broom, that is gone to the judge.
Gone to the judge.
How did that feeling compare to winning Grade Ones and big races in Leopardstown, Cheltenham, actually?
Ah, look, big races are great any day you win them, you know. It's very hard to say one is better than the other. Obviously, that was a fantastic day, but not having the people there, you know, sort of took a little bit away from it. You didn't have the crowds, and you didn't have the owners, and the owners, like Finbar Cahill and Tom Hendren, own them. And Finbar Cahill is one of my very best friends, who's been a friend of mine and an owner of mine since back in the 70s. And he's, you know, we're great pals. We've soldiered together all around the world, and here, there, and everywhere. It was a pity that he wasn't there, and like, because Finbar enjoys the celebration, it was a pity. But look, it was great. I can't say it was better than winning the, you know, like some of the big jump races are fantastic as well. Like, I mean, I still actually think people often ask me what was the favourite race that I enjoyed winning, and I still think. I often look back at it and think that the first Galway hurdle that Pinch Hitter, who was owned by Finn Bacall, won at the time, I think was probably one of the best, because it was a big breakthrough to win a race like that at the time, and I got a great kick out of that. But look, you can't sort of pick out one and say it's better than the other. But I enjoy them all. I still enjoy winning. I enjoy winning a race in Clonmel or winning a race anywhere. And I often think when they win, I say, you know, that's another one, because you say to yourself, oh, I've done it again, you know, because it's not easy to win. It's not easy for anyone to win. There's no such thing as it being any guarantee in it. No. You know, it's just not easy to win.
I was tipping up a horse running tomorrow, and I was looking at the trainer said 80 runners in 5 years, and he said one winner, and that's not uncommon. It's really difficult. My last question for you is it still possible to dream in the National Hunt game that you can fall on an unfashionable horse? Because that's what National Hunt racing should be, that it's not all the, you know, the wealthy that have the good horses. Can you still fall on that horse that has an unfashionable pedigree and does a beef or salmon or whatever and does wonders?
Of course you can. So that's what racing's all about. Of course you can. I mean, that's what happens there. And that's what keeps it alive. Like, I mean, as I say, the glorious uncertainty of racing. But of course you can. If that didn't be, people wouldn't keep going. And it's the joy of doing that makes it, you know, that makes it such a fantastic sport.
No, you're headed for Dundalk. Are you going to have another winner today?
No, I have two two-year-olds running tonight. I think one of them might run well. Mom, I hope she'll run a good race.
What about your three-year-old hurdler tomorrow?
Yeah, he was very disappointing in the north today. He ran. He seemed to. We expect him to run really well. He backed away from all his hurdles, and he didn't. He jumped very well at home since, and I schooled him this morning, and he jumped very well. So, yes, I would hope he'd be thereabouts. I think the Goodish ground would suit him, and you know, it's not going to be very soft anyway. Hopefully, if he puts in a good round jump, and he's in very good form. Yes, and he's quite a decent horse.
Well, listen, congratulations to everybody involved in Navan on their 100 years and the centenary, and best of luck with everything that's coming. Noel, great to have you with us. Thanks a million.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Noel Mead, there are nearly 3,000 winners, and obviously the chairman of Navan Racecourse. Obviously, Navan's had all the big ones down through the years. They've all been there.
Such a great time for Navan, because the first horse I was involved in with the late John Walsh and a few other characters was called Operation Houdini. And we ended up, like, typical of, like, when your first bet wins, it's a bad thing because then you end up loving it or whatever. Like, but when your first horse that you're involved in, like, he ended up, I don't know, he was kind of what I was talking about with Noel there. He's that horse that doesn't, it's hard to find anymore, but he was an all right pedigree. Stallion wasn't particularly popular with a very small trainer in Limerick, and ended up being really good. And he was, like, I think he finished second 6 or 7 times before he won, but. When he took the fences, he finished second in the Troytown, which is their big race, to Not Repair. And but we used to get buses to Navan, and we used to go back to O'Connell's, you know, the iconic pub in the Guinness ad there, where even at the home of the black stuff, the dream of a white one, Mrs. O was, as it'll be known in screen, and Mrs. O was alive at the time, and we organised the bus back. And I remember that particular day, it was a horrible, horrible day. Navan's the coldest racetrack in the world, and Operation Houdini was cantering at the third last, give or take. Baroni won the race. He was cantering at the third last, and he was a horse that found loads of pressure, and we were like, oh god, this is exciting. And he unseated the rider, he headbutted the jockey, and the jockey had a big bloody nose, and he fell off him. And we were really despondent. We were like, right, let's get the bus to Mrs. O's here. We got to Mrs. O's, and she was observing the old Sunday couple of hours when the pub was closed. And I was like, god, I'd organise the bus. I was like, what do we do here? So eventually she let us in anyway. Then we soon forgot about the... But it was a real racing pub, like...
There was enough knocking on the door and...
Yeah. Do you know, do you remember the old, the 2 hours or whatever was they observed? Was it...
Mass, something to do with mass.
Yeah. Mrs. O's, she's passed away since, but that pub, real racing pub, and it would be definitely associated with... it's in screen. It's right. Just... It has the toilets are outside, I think. No TV, like, really, really famous.
Proper order, yeah.
Proper order, but brilliant Guinness and all that, but a real racing pub.
Fresh air when you go to the Dax to freshen you up, so big you can go time. Back in and squeeze one more in.
Squeeze one more, and a lot of people would be there from racing, be it Fairy House or Navan, and I love Navan. I think it's a great racetrack just for the test of the horse, but great memories.
Well, if you want to go along and see what Johnny's talking about,
enter our competition this week. Obviously, 2021 marks 100 years since the foundation of Navan Racecourse, and the County Meath Track have exciting plans in place to mark this special milestone on Ladbrokes Troytown Chase Day, their flagship jumps meeting on Sunday, November the 21st. To win lunch for you and your guests on their 100th birthday, let us know which jockey recorded the fastest ever century of winners on the flat in Ireland at Navan Racecourse in August. Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. And we will call you after the show. And you probably know who that is, because we did say that we've had him on recently. And also, he was on board Helvetic Dream when Noel Mead won his first Grade One.
It was a great day, to be fair. It did kind of show that, you know, you can... Like Jessica Harrington, in fairness, she's kind of become more of a flat trainer.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That changed. Yeah. That,
it's, like, not it's just not easy with National Hunt. It's... I don't want to say you're competing with, but if like you look at Gordon Elliott now, Gordon Elliott has Noel and Valerie Morn as a patron, and if you, so I did an interview with him for, or on the Wire podcast yesterday, he's had his last 12 horses, 8 of them have won, and most of them have been odds on, and they're really expensive horses, and Noel and Valerie Morn have made their money, and now they're going to invest it in racing and all that, and obviously Willie Mullins is his big owners, but it's very, very hard to compete, and it's a long game as well. It's a long game. Like, we had, do you remember when Kevin Doyle bred the, was it the Camelot half-brother to Altior? That takes, for that horse to run, you're talking from the breeding process, like 5 to 6 years. It's a long, long process, and the injuries are very difficult. And I hope we never lose our love for the National Hunt game, because it is so unique, and I think what Rachel did there kind of shows why we love it.
Yeah, it seems like it's embedded in Irish culture.
It is, yeah.
And that's why it's important.
All farms had a horse, I suppose, if they, you know, if back in the day, if they could afford it. But it was just part of your life. And yeah. I think that's why we're probably innately good at it. I'm speculating here, but our horsemanship and our jumps racing love is unique, really.
We had to let Noel go there, but we didn't get to talk about, he had a Cheltenham winner this year who was a winner at 80-1 and then came back and won again. This is Jeff Kidder. Mm. So obviously...
Again, was off the flat.
He's able to do this, like, at the same time, and it's clear whatever the skill set required is a fundamental skill set, and then you just use your mind to go, well, I'm going to place these ones here and this one is going to go here, and I can see into the future a little bit.
Yeah, like, it's funny, you often ask the question when they come on, and they will tell you, what's the difference between a National Hunt horse and a flat horse? And they'll say, very little. It's like,
get them fit.
Yeah, but God, there has to be more to it than that, because, like, you're essentially training horses not only to jump but to go a lot. Like, your mile and two horse is a 2 mile hurdler, so they're going a lot slower and they have to settle and obviously have to jump. Like that horse Lunar Power that he has won tomorrow, he didn't jump well at all at Downroyal. Then he hacked up in the flat at Leopardstown. But every trainer says it's, but a lot of them are just saying the flat is easier and you've kind of more opportunities now.
Yeah. While you were falling off your bike, there was a big story breaking. Dara Corhore had a great story about the raid on a property near Monastrevin. We're still waiting for more details to come out, and that we will obviously deal in much more detail with the story when we get an opportunity to do some further digging on it, and when the findings actually come out about what was found, what was discovered, what was impounded, who the people involved are, and what case they're making in their defence about what happened too. So unless there's something you specifically want to add.
No, I suppose just the context of it coming out after the findings from the whole Oireachtas hearing came out and essentially found that Irish racing was sound in terms of, or sound as they would like it to be and as sound as it can be in terms of drug testing and all that. So the timing of this was very interesting. It just should be said that, you know, in the world we live in, WhatsApp will tell you such and such a trainer and such and such a trainer, but it's important to read Richie Forrest's article in the Racing Post. There was reference to two trainers, I think, who were on the site at the time. There's no suggestion that those trainers were up to anything wrong, because they were just there doing... This is a situation where you get your horse treated for such and such in an entirely legitimate way. So you shouldn't jump to any conclusions on this, and I certainly haven't anyway. I don't know what's going to come out of it, but it's good that we're hearing this stuff, and it's good that it's going on, because if there is a drug problem, we want to get to the bottom of it, obviously.
It's true. It is true. Yeah. And that definitely has to be a part of the... if there's no enforcement and you don't hear about any enforcement, then there's no deterrence.
Exactly,
at the same time,
if nothing is ever found, that's also not a sign that everything is great. So there's definitely a happy medium where some people are getting caught who, you know,
Aidan O'Brien had a very interesting article where he said, like, this is damaged racing, this damages reputation, you know, show me the evidence. And, you know, he came down very strongly on it. So, like, I think whatever you think about what Jim Bulger said, which was all unsubstantiated, it got a lot of people talking about an issue or a non-issue, and it definitely, we're closer to finding out about drug cheats now than we would have been.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, less than 24 hours before you there's 24 hours left to enter the Tote 10 to follow for the 2021-2022 jump season. Myself, Johnny and Danny Mullins are taking part to try and win $5,000 for the Irish Injured Jockeys. We'll keep you informed of our performance as the season progresses, but if you want to get involved, get on to tote.ie. The paid Tote 10 to follow game features prizes for the top 500 finishers, a guaranteed minimum prize pool of $100,000. There's also a free game available. To get involved, check out tote.ie and enter your stable before 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. A lot of crossover between they're probably
obvious enough ones, like Irish Heavy, but Irish Heavy and kind of, I suppose, going towards the Stay in Chases and that. I'm trying to divvy them up a bit. What did you go for?
You liked your owners. You've got one owner, 40% of your horses.
I didn't even notice that. There we go. Gordon won't be too happy. I've gone for a lot of Cheveley Park, haven't I?
You have.
I've gone for Aloho, Aplutar, Anva Allen, Shishkin, Saldier, Honeysuckle, Fernie Hollow, Bob Ollinger, Classical Dream, and Flooring Porter.
Yeah, I think I don't have Flooring Porter, which is a mistake.
Not necessarily.
An oversight on my part, I think. But I have certainly got several of those. I definitely went with Honeysuckle.
Do you not remember who you went for?
I mean, did you remember those? You've got a concussion, so you're entitled.
Concussion doesn't like bar you from, you know, several days later. Like, what of all the jockeys who just have these falls every day and just get on with it? Here's me, Jacques and Pursois.
Champ, which is Eclat de Rire, Envoy LN, Fiddler on the Roof, Galopine des Champs. I like my French names. Honeysuckle.
I've seen not in this English.
Classical Dream, Manila Indo. On the Ropes, that is English, correct.
Manila Indo, and it's a good. Sounds like some French adult show there, but and it's a good. What did you go for? Manila Indo. He was beaten on his seasonal comeback, but I imagine all roads lead to Cheltenham. I think he might be a bit more vulnerable this year, but where does Envoy Allen go? Like, it's. And remember as well.
So I should take Envoy Allen out before tomorrow.
No, I think the jury's out on them, but you'd forget with all the Elliott kind of musical chairs, a lot of these horses ended up elsewhere as well. And some owners say loyal, some didn't, and that's kind of that's one of the layers to the narrative of the campaign.
That would be Drive to Survive.
Yeah,
you'd be over in Cheveley Park watching on TV as Gordon Elliott starts banging in the winners again, going ooh.
It's bound to be a couple of finishes between them. And if they say that, you know, it was amicable, well, I don't know, these things are hardly amicable. Like, it was a mad time, in fairness. It was a mad time. You could see why people made certain decisions, but it's going to be some jumps campaign. The talent of these horses, Bob Ollinger making his chase debut tomorrow. I was looking at his odds for the Marsh Chase. He's like generally 2-1, 5-2 to win the Marsh Chase without even jumping a fence. So
That's too short. I want you to
appreciate it, and
I want you to do a bit of homework and give me an L 30-1 shot to win at Cheltenham. That's what I'm looking for. You know this.
I would have sort of tipped my mate Mozzie before he ran last week, but he'd had a bit of a chance, 25-1. But appreciated, I think, is 7-1. Now, if I know Willie Mullins, he's not going to run appreciated in Fernie Hollow and the Arkell. He's already spoke about appreciated wanting a trip. So I think he will step him up to take on Bob Bollinger in the Arkell. And he's sevens, and Bob Bollinger is like 5-2, which I can't get my head around. But the implication is that he may run in the Arkell, but like, it's a long way away. I think Cheltenham is way too diluted in terms of races, and that's the problem. It's like, oh, I have a great bet, but he mightn't run it.
Yeah.
But Bob Bollinger, for all of that, he's tremendously exciting, and it's a great race car that punches down tomorrow.
Okay. Anything else for this weekend you want to talk about, or will we go?
This weekend, obviously, then I haven't actually looked at the decks, but there's the Morgiana on Sunday, which we probably have time to look at. Punchdown Sunday, the big race. Have you time to get up?
Yeah, go for it. Okay.
Have you time to get it up?
Sunday's race card.
Little production meeting on air, Johnny, yeah.
A 2-day meeting, obviously, at Punchtown. Now, there were some great entries. It looked like Echoes and Rain was going to be favourite, but I don't know what was going to run after that in the big one on Sunday. It's going to be the last couple of weeks we've seen the return of proper jumps race, and I think today as well with Rachel and that horse would get so many people talking.
So are we talking about...
I'm just filling time here while you look for the...
Abacadabra, Durazzo, that race, Sharjah.
Yes.
Zanahira.
What else?
Echoes and Rain.
Echoes and Rain, there we have it. We have a hell of a race there. Yeah. Echoes and Rain is this really highly touted Willie Mullins trained mare who has taken on Zanahira, who was like hot favourite for the Triumph last year, was a big price antipost. What else we got there? Sharjah.
Durazzo, the outsider, and Abacadabras.
Abacadabras, yeah, that's a brilliant race for like a tactical field, but that's a great race to set us up for the year. And then Honeysuckle in the Hatton's Grace when that happens as well. It's all happening.
Okay, so that is Sunday at Punchestown.
That is Sunday at Punchestown, yeah. And tomorrow, as I said, we have Bob Ollinger making his chase debut, and Cheltenham as well is on as well. A lot of Irish gone over, right. Just like old times, yeah.
Coming thick and fast. Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. We are live every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock on all the OTB social channels, and then again from 8 on Off the Ball on Newstalk. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball. And they're on. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.